I'm live. This is a reworked version, 500.98½ of Caught Balancing Magic. This is the first two chapters, which have been, as I said, heavily reworked. I'm coming back to this story, and as I come back to it, I'm reading through it, and I thought I would share these chapters, which are still need to be reworked again. I've never written an epic fantasy before. I've never wanted to make the world and its characters its own character, its own epic thing. And I have found that because I'm a pantser, I have made many mistakes. And so these first few chapters are really heavily on the information dump, which means you get a lot of stuff up front. And I'm sorry for that. But you can see some of the process of my process of writing. And part of that process is reading my work aloud and sharing it with all of you. So here I am. I am sharing it. This is the draft 25,000.5½. What would I say? I don't know. I can't even remember what I just said 5 seconds ago. Of Caught Balancing Magic by Issa Wellen, Chapter 1, Annika's Point of View, Feeling Sick. I felt them coming in the soles of my feet, a tickling sensation, a vibration. Hard to explain, but there it is. I felt my doom coming at me, feet first. I thought the prickle was the result of a before work barefoot walk. That's how things always go for me. One good thing leading straight into a long line of bad. I like to walk through the old, drained woods behind the lodge where I live to clear my head. It calmed me. There were thorns and poisonous things in the process of taking over the giant stone-skinned trees, but I knew my way around. That was my forest. I worked those trees for Califera with the rest of the village brats as soon as my mother let me free out of her sight. It was the only place that felt safe to me, even though most of the village stayed away, afraid of the ghosts of the past. But my little free time in nature led me right into this weird reaction. Of course, that's how my life is. No health issues, no. No, those were rare for me. But weird stuff. That happens so much, I should get used to it. But I'm not. I can't become accustomed to weird. My life was supposed to be dreary and boring. I'm just a null. Everyone knows things like iffy harbingers and scary doomsayers don't bother nulls. We are above things magical and mystical. Nulls use machinery. They're the stoneborn. They don't do portents or signs. People of bone and stone, as the saying goes. That's me, a plain nothing, just getting by and trying to survive in a world torn apart from sky to shadows by those who had magic and those who wanted magic. What in the world was wrong with my feet? Had I stepped in some kind of rogue Magellan's droppings? That must be it. There was magicker shit on my feet, and now I was infected by it or some such. Cas misgata, I whispered under my breath, something my mother said all the time. That's just the food of fate. All the other good gnolls I knew managed to avoid the magic to touch creatures we called Magellan, but fate tended to poop on my pathway, my food, my entire life, every chance it got. I wanted better. I dreamed of better, but this world didn't take much time for better. Not when you were female. Whew, I tried to just go with the weird feeling. It could end up stinky, Hey, I like stinky. I just ask casual and let it add to my natural, unwashed stink. I went about my business, grabbing dirty mugs and washing each one. Warm soapy water, scrub scrub, hot clean water, rinse. I had a kind of apron on over my clothes, and as usual, it was soaked and cold. The kitchen was a cold place. Hot water was heated off the hearth in the other room, in between the pots of grain for the udo. Unfortunately, the cold didn't numb Doom's tingle for me at all. The persistent feeling demanded attention. I couldn't think it away with random thoughts or a mindless cleaning task. An annoying bug crawling across my skin, biting all the way. I had to make this feeling stop. Finding a place in Jack's kitchen, I sat down to see what was happening. Out of my shoes, my feet reeked. My eyes watered from the stench, and I had to hold my breath. I was disgusting, but I loved it. There's safety for a girl in gross. My feet weren't red or swollen. No red marks, no thorns then, normal dirty feet. That's a disappointment. I needed an explanation for this new case of mysterious weird. 1 second after I seated myself on the farm box, wood creaking under my butt, right foot in hand, a giant block of a man came around the corner and caught me not working. "Boy, you lazy stinking twat. I pay you to sit?" Jack asked. His hand shot out to pull me up, and I dodged it, jumping as my feet hit the floor like I landed on a hot plate, a cabbage box chair falling with a bang. My feet sizzled. The floor was on fire. "Even the rats that love your slop get a break once in a while," I told Jack as he reached for me with his other giant hoof he used for a hand. "I don't pay rats." "You pay me?" I hopped away, making faces at him, my eyes on the floor looking for smoke. I couldn't help it. Something was very wrong with me. Could Jack see it too? "Boy," Jack yelled. He didn't act like any different, like this was any different than his normal belligerent self. The wide nostrils of his flat nose flared, but that wasn't from a new smell. He always did that when he was around me. "Dumpling man, sack of stink, blood bar toad," I shouted as he grabbed my shoulder and made a serious attempt to shake my teeth loose. Jack knew I was a girl. He called me a boy as insult. As irritating as it was, this worked in my favor. Half of his customers thought I was a lumpy, dirty drudge of a boy who never bathed. The village had boys aplenty running wild, doing drudge work. We lacked a mother to make sure we washed behind our ears and had indifferent fathers too tired from the woebegones of life to care. I had no father, which gave me even more reason to dress and stink in an effort to fit in with them. It was only wise to avoid unwanted attention. Jack went along with the farce for his own reasons. Still high-stepping imaginary hot coals, my bare feet pricked and burned. Jack shouted in my face, his spit dotting my cheeks. "Promised your sister Badonna I wouldn't kill you today." "She's not my sister," I said in reflex in my head. Aloud, I spat back. "You also promised her a silver coin the next time she let you touch her tits and made you feel like a man, because you're really not a man, are you, Jack? You're some kind of magicker in disguise." The slur I used for one of the Magellan just made Jack madder. He shook me harder. I'd have bruises for sure. We were all gnolls here, but accusations of having unlicensed magic or just as bad, hiding a Magellan from the First Order, were serious offenses. Jack thought he was this and that and all the hairy balls in between. He brewed a sour ale that had the village all addicted, as tasty and as cheap as piss, but stronger and cheaper than the dreaming drug blue. In short, the males of Little Indio loved him. He believed they would defend him up to a point, as he pretended to be an old gnoll soldier, battle wounded and war tired. I was suspicious that he was really something else entirely. Being called a magicker could get a person hauled off to the city by a desperate, quota-starved order patrol. Good thing his superior stupidity revived his size. He may be Magellan, made of magic, but he wasn't smart. He never asked me how I knew the patrol sent out from the High Proctor's Consortium terrified him. "Shut your food hole there, boy," he snarled the words, digging his fingers deep, lifting me off the ground and tossing me down. It hurt bad. Jack was powerful strong. I turned my yelp of pain into a manic laugh, very unboylike and nothing like a normal no, who'd be begging and crying if they could manage any sound at all. But if he saw me go soft one time, he'd always think he could get the better of me. "Then let me get back to work," I said after, accusingly. "I thought I stepped on something in this nasty sty of your kitchen, but it was only another giant bean roach." Now, I could personally certify that this kitchen floor was spotless. I kept it so after the first time Jack made me lick it for mouthing off to him. Now it had a nice citrus taste. "Don't be wasting the night, boy. I can throw you out as easy as I took you in." He walked away with that threat. The backs of my knees, the tops of my thighs, the meaty part of my palms buzzed crazy and hot. It was uncomfortable as anything I'd felt before. Jack's rough handling turned to a memory the moment he left me alone. The new bruises were a flesh and blood thing I understood. This feeling was nothing normal. Doom was a-coming. As a skinny little gnoll in this world of have and have-nots, I was so low on the not list that anything could kill me. A farm wife had more security than I did. That's what I told myself every day. And damn it to all the powers high and low, that's what I believed. I'm null kind. Descendant of the lost ones who arrived on the shores of Indonesia in a floating boat of metal. I wasn't made of magic. I wasn't a natural-born native carrier of the energy. No weird feelings of doom for me. It simply wasn't possible. No shadows, no darkness, no plots, no portents, and no weird messages from fate. That stuff didn't happen to gnolls. Since the tingle and the heat had to be either infection or allergy, I made the smart choice and formulated my own farm wife body cleanse. The locals knew just what to do with sickness like this. I'd purge, downing 2 big soup spoons full of mineral oil and baking salts. Nasty stuff. It was all I could do not to gag on it. That would cure me. My stomach would hate me. And everyone would smell me. But it was a remedy all good gnoll mamas from the market swore by, and so I did it. 30 minutes later, I ended up trapped in the toilet box with an eye-watering brown stink worse than my feet. This disgusting smell was sticky. I could hear Jack shouting at me from inside the pub, the dirty dishes and the pig slop piling up in his kitchen. He bellowed like an angry bull. I suspected that his other shape was a bovine dukkha from the plains. I had an old book from my mom with all the known Magellan and native Indonesian creatures, the high, the low, and the very ancient listed in it. It was a type of native-born contraband a good gnoll like me should dutifully turn into the patrol or the nearest correction house so that they could cart it off to the High and Mighty's Consortium College. But they'd taken a lot of books like mine from all over. There must have been much better reads from the cities. Mine was completely created by hand, and some parts made no sense at all. They wouldn't miss my book. It was special only to me. I'd read it cover to cover and traced my fingers over every detailed painting. She never said, but I think my mom had made that book herself. I'd never let it go. Anyway, there was a drawing of a bovine Gukka under the listing of four hoof and horn. Big, bullish creatures, no tails. They could stand on 2 feet. I don't know how Jack made himself look like a gnoll, but he reminded me so much of the bull-headed crap machines that I knew he had to be one. I suspected that the patrols hadn't captured and contained all the creatures made of magic in the whole wide world. Stood to reason, some of them found a way to hide. I wished I could hide. Oh, my remedy for the attack of the weird did me not a lick of good. Casvis Magda, damn it! My feet tingled and burned whenever they touched the ground and traveled up my legs to my gut, bursting with urgency, like I should know something, do something. What would I do? Gnolls were not fit for more than farm work or washing dishes by hand. I didn't have any kind of fancy Ilium-powered machine to use to scan my illness and find out what was wrong. So, fine then. I would do nothing. I would feel nothing. I wouldn't answer no burning urgencies either. This girl was not having anything to do with trouble like that. Nope, not me. I lost my guts in the poop house and wiped myself as best I could. Then, sneaking to the stars and back again, I went to work, minding my business and my mouth. It's chapter 2, Bradonna. This is in Bradonna's point of view. Annika's half-sister, stepsister, not half-sister. I mispronounced a few things as I read live, just so you know. Consortium. It's a consortium. I might change that name. It's a school, a college, consortium. Feet braced evenly apart, Bradonna moved her knees, swaying her hips lazily to the sound of music. She kept the movement simple. Tonight's room didn't deserve effort. Jack paid her enough to eat on, and she saw no one who might carry extra coppers to spread her way. They could look at her and lust for the price of ale and samudo and fried hot spice califera. Extras cost more. More than that wasn't on the table. Only a foolish woman settled for the local blicks. Promises of good, wholesome life away from Jack's pub wouldn't charm Bradonna out of her dancing skirts. The men rolling square bones and shoveling food into their mouths, they knew that. 3 locals sat at a round table closest to where she danced, and the mummer duo listlessly played Oh the Green. The youngest of them looked up from his food. Bradonna gave him a teasing hip roll, swishing her skirt and her blousy top. When the white skin of her belly winked at him, he looked back down at his Udo, blushing. Next to him, his older brother saw the move, glanced at Bradonna, and sent her a sloppy grin before punching the younger man hard on the shoulder. She could hear the other's surprised oof over the music. They'd been at that table a while. Janice, the server on duty, had whispered in Bradonna's ear that their farm wife was in labor, and they'd all run here to hide out until that event was finished. Since the balancing war, males outnumbered females everywhere, from Little Indio to Breckendale to Yesidio, Perdane, and as far as Amber Reeve. There was no good reason for there to be so few women in a tiny village like Little Indio. There was no disease, no sickness. But females everywhere were soft-skinned prey for men, the weak ones at least. The High Proctor's plan to bring Bradonna back into the world set right the scales to bring balance. The High Proctor's plan to bring balance back into the world set right the scales of magic between the have and have nots had trickled down with negative effects into every population. Women became a commodity to be sold, traded, and marketed, and the lack of available women in the area was a good business for Bradonna. It upped her status in the world. I forgot to turn off my Do Not Disturb. There weren't a lot of options for her. But of the few available, Bradonna was looking for something better. She wanted good food that someone else prepared. Fine clothing with hand-stitched flowers that someone else spent hours embroidering. Gold pearls in her hair and blessedly clean sheets every day. It didn't seem too high of a goal, but it wasn't a goal she could reach out to in the middle of Little Indio. If Pradhana wanted to be more than a farm wife or a pleasure dancer, she'd have to escape the village with something more to sell. She had a plan for that, but setting it in motion was tricky. Dancing mindlessly, she watched Jack as he left the kitchen carrying a big fat pot of new grain for the udo to boil in the central hearth. His nice old place was built from post-arrival times, before null kind outnumbered the native-born, a time when men knew how to live without ilium. One of the most practical buildings in town, there was a central huge stone and iron fireplace keeping things warm and cooking the bulk of the food he served. The rock and wood building itself was a little chilly and dark inside, which made the constantly burning main fire a good thing to have for every season. He had a loft upstairs with three rooms, a big area for special crowds behind that hearth, and a long, not wood bar next to the area where Pradhana danced. The kitchen was built behind the bar. The pub didn't require a witch to function or any kind of outside energy source other than the wood to burn in the hearth. Pradhana liked Jack's pub better than the miner's lodge she shared with her stepsister. Most nights she chose to bed here with Jack or a customer with enough coin to stay more than an hour, somewhat safer than the run-down, tattered lodge her father moved them into when she was 10. That building worked on ilium power, which the mining company took with them when they left Little Indio behind. The lack of magic energy to power its heat and water sources resulted in a badly constructed two-level trash heap. Pradhana would do anything to escape the trash heap. In her mind, every farmhouse looked like the lodge. To be a farm wife meant chasing rats out of the pantry and shaking fleas out of the bed sheets while bulging pregnant with some hefty male's child. No, thank you. Jack hooked a pot onto the iron arm attached to the hearth before turning the winch to set it into place. Fire made him nervous, so he didn't look at her until he headed back to the bar, giving her big cow eyes. He was not an attractive man, but he did have large, easy-to-read eyes. Too possessive for his own good, he had more power in Little Indio than any woman and most men. He kept the locals like the three at the table from carting Pradhana off into the night to claim her and force a pledge on her. As her employer, he was the closest thing to a protector she could get without a uniting ceremony and a pledge. She gave him a false smile, restraining the certainty behind her teeth that he was going to mess up her future with his lovelorn stupidity. Sky save her from sex-obsessed idiots. She was surrounded by them day and night. They were easy to manage until the point she asked them to help her and her stepsister to the city. Jack especially wanted them both to stay. Pradhana would get to play his hearth bride, and stepsister Annika would take Pradhana's place, servicing customers from her back instead of in the kitchen. They could sell Annika's virginity when she came of age, Jack said. She's a lumpy mess, but wash her up and she's fine. You'd be mine and we'd have silver to spend. Jack didn't know his place in the world at all. As if he had a right, daring to think she'd allow it. You can't. She's my sister. Wouldn't be right. I'm supposed to take care of her. I need to find her a proper husband so she can have a better life. How could you be my husband if you would use my own sister like that for your own greed? How dare you? You should help us. Jack gave up on the idea for the time being, but that look he sent her said he was thinking on it again. For a man who sold women, he got awfully jealous. She had to find a way to get out of this place and back to the city where she was born. Jack had no clue about Annika's true value, and it was best to keep it that way. Chapter 3, Pradhana, the Mayor. The door to the pub opened from the other end of the room, the cool outside air rushing in. Everyone looked up, including Jack. The mayor, head covered with his official hat of office, paused, taking in the room, before he rushed over to the stools spaced evenly at the bar. Jack greeted the smaller man, his voice booming too loud. The three at the table raised their mugs. The mummers let their music swell. With one thick arm around the smaller man's shoulder, Jack greeted the mayor, taking him to a seat. What was going on? Bertona thought he looked as sneaky as a lumbering bear. No need for sneaky. No one cared what the mayor did. This town knew its place. Everyone kept their heads down. Leaving her spot, she shimmied across the room to intercept the mayor. He was from some family with rooted connections in Ysidio, the only person she knew who traveled regularly to the city. Pulling the mayor up to the bar, Jack rounded the edge of the kitchen to get the mayor a drink. Janice had already had a brew poured, handing it to Jack with a smile. He didn't say thank you. Go and take a mop to the toilet box now. Get it cleaned up. I'm tired of you leaving before it's done. Get the boy to do it, Janice answered. She leaned forward and showed off her cleavage. The esteemed village head loved to tuck a copper when he got the chance. There wasn't a woman in town who didn't know it. I don't want the boy who washes my cups and cuts the meat to be washing the toilet box, Jack said.
I serve your cups, Jack, she answered back without looking at him.
And I said you do it now, Janice, his voice lowered a notch in warning. She didn't flinch. Indifferent to him, Jack couldn't afford to hit the other woman since he had no tolerance for working with whoever might take her place, if he could find a replacement. Janice exchanged a smirk with Bradonna. They both knew Jack badly wanted to hit her.
I'll do it tonight, but not again tomorrow. Men around here are all blind after drinking your stuff, Jack. They couldn't shoot in a piss pot if someone held it over their peckers, and you know it, she said.
I know it, he laughed, proud, his smile returning. He passed the drink to the mayor, who took it into his hands as if it were precious.
Hello, Addo.
Hello, girl, said the mayor.
She said hello, Addo, with a bright smile. He liked to hear the local Indonesian honorifics, though he wasn't a native. Most no kind were like that, taking what wasn't their birthright. All a part of the balancing.
Bradonna kissed the mayor's bearded cheek, hiding her smile. He'd paid for her time more than once and would assume she was happy to see him, greedy for more of his attention.
Well, then, you said you wanted to know when that bounty hunter was back, and he is. You know the one, him and his men, the mayor said.
Bradonna split a glance between the mayor and Jack. Bounty hunter? She only knew of one that had ever come through here. Calyx Argus, a well-formed specimen of tall and muscled Northman. Had Jack been keeping an eye out for him and his men?
That spit is back! The mayor announced, as if he suspected all along that the hunter would be returning.
You see him? Jack asked.
No, damn it, he's been coming in a different way, don't you know? Up the river, using the Bane Bridge, coming into my town, bold as you please. I haven't seen him or his official pass. Uses the old roads and goes to one of the dead houses in the woods.
The mayor shivered at the very idea. Dead houses? How would he do that? There were old, abandoned Indonesian homes out there, emptied and ransacked right after the war, oldest than the oldest person Bradonna knew. But nothing lived there other than empty husks of the past and a few vengeful ghosts. No one dared trespass. The wood at the edge of New Indio shared a reputation for ghosts with a bitter hunger for revenge. After the Proctor's people had mined out all the ilium and the silvery solid form of living magic, and from every vein they could find, the place had turned dark and haunted. The roads going in and out of that forest were thick with thornbrush.
The dangerous stuff was known to grow overnight, thicker and nastier after each attempt of killing it. Its spike-tipped veins trapped and devoured anything bigger than a fox that tried to pass through its serpentine coils. Okay, there was one small section where the thorns were so big and tall that the local brats could crawl through. But that was to get to the trees for the Califera. Nearby, the miller's house perched over the river, and close to that was an old road that had dead-ended into the forest, and its man-eating thorns. Oh, was the bounty hunter using that road?
I wouldn't go into that wood to save my life. You bet I wouldn't, the mayor said, wiping a hand over his mouth as if he could wipe the very idea away. But people saw him and his crew last night, after the peels lit up by mage light. Did you hear him? The machine of his?
He has witch light?
The duels I seen. Three of them buggered things. He parks them outside when he comes in here.
Jack looked at Berdonna for confirmation, and she nodded. She'd never seen the bounty hunter's magical wheeled bikes, but she'd heard all about them from the patrons.
Was he a real mage, then? She thought he was just a well-heeled gnoll man. He looked gnollish, no doubt, and she'd never noticed his allure, the natural-born energy that pulled shine from witches. As a void, Berdonna had just enough magic to sometimes recognize it in others with the same bloodlines. Hers was a trickle, so insubstantial that the patrols ignored her. If Calyx Argus and his men had magic, native or Magellan, then she'd missed it. Could she convince him to help her? Jack would never. The mayor was ambivalent. But every hunter was a man of avarice. The wicked things he did for the love of coin were well known.
He glows like a beacon fire, the mayor said, his disgust so heavy he leaned to the side and spat on the ground. There was no reason to hide his prejudice when most everyone around him agreed with it. Jack nodded.
Working for the First Order, then? Or a consortium man?
Jack nodded. Working for the First Order, then, or a consortium man. Do you think he's patrol? No one goes around like that if they don't have a pass.
He's a hunter, Jack. Does as he pleases. He's not stopped by my house to show me any pass, the mayor grumbled.
Jack frowned. In a bigger city of the First Order had offices and stations where all travelers were expected to get a stamp of approval. A person had to show their travel pass along with identity cards. She'd experienced them herself with her father. To travel without a pass could land someone in detention. The things that happened there, at the hands of the First Order correctors, were about as bad as what happened with the Thornbush. A person might disappear forever. In Lindell, Indio, it was courteous to show your papers at the mayor's house before doing any business. A courtesy, because there was no one here to enforce the law, and no holding cells for any detention.
He got them duos. Maybe he thinks that's pass enough, Jack said.
Not to me. I need his papers. I'm supposed to add my official seal and permission, said the mayor.
Of course you are, Berdonna soothed the mayor's growing outrage.
Must be a big man to think he doesn't need to show his papers. Must be an official business, then. Consortium. First Order military? What do you think? Jack pressed, his wide forehead bunched up in a worried frown that matched the one working its way over his lips.
The consortium was a special branch of the High Proctor's government, a learning partnership between magicless null kind and the magic-using native-born focused on creating balance in every part of the world.
He's working for whoever he pleases, the mayor answered, which meant he didn't know.
Where did he come from? Berdonna asked.
The mayor took her hand and kissed it.
Bounty hunters take contracts from the highest bidder, sweetie. They do the dirty work of whoever hires them.
He patiently explained what she already knew. Berdonna made encouraging noises and tried not to roll her eyes. He assumed she had as much brain as a feather duster.
I've been asking, you know.
You know, the miller said he had a woman with him, Sugar, a pretty shiny piece of Sweet Rich riding right there out in the open, riding right in front of him. How is he getting away with that? Said the mayor.
How indeed? Berdonna wanted to pull her hand away at the mention of witches. If she had inherited just a little bit more magic through her mother's bloodline, she wouldn't have to live in this mud hole. The patrol would have swept her up, or she would have found her own generous protector in the city. She wasn't a witch. She was a void, a person who came from natural-born, native bloodline of magic carriers, but who was only void of any useful power. Her type of pretty was still valuable, though. Men wanted to possess a void more than some square-made gnoll wife, but it wasn't enough to buy the life she deserved. The patrol had left her behind the last time they came through town.
Told you. Must be a hired man. Jack nodded, as if the mystery had all been solved.
A bounty hunter was worse than the patrol, scarier than the First Order officials or the Correction Army, worse than anything. They were men with an unpredictable license that defied all the normal boundaries. He could hunt anyone, anywhere. If he had a signed and approved contract, nothing could interfere with his hunt.
Hired, sure, but what is he? And why is he here? Why would a spit like that come to my town?
The mayor wasn't reassured. He took his drink and swallowed it deep, spilling some down his chest, anxiety making his hands shake.
You sure he is a spit?
He doesn't look like a spit. Looks like a landed man. No kind, stone made. Same as you and me. Muscle and wood. Last time he was in my place, I saw no woman. Saw two men with him, Jack said.
Berdonna agreed with Jack here. A spit, or a native male magic user, would have to be connected to some kind of official channel to be out in the open, riding magic-fueled machines and carrying witches willy-nilly for every eye to see.
Witches were considered the High Proctor's property. His tool for balancing, the most rare and expensive female around. The miller must have seen a void like Berdonna, costumed up like a native witch, one of the Indonesian, a trick Berdonna herself had tried a time or two to get extra coin. A magical person had no sense of the difference between a void and native magic user. It was all based on what their eyes told them. Berdonna had inherited the telltale shiny star eyes, wheat-colored hair, and the slight curvy structure of an Indonesian from her parents. But nothing else. There was no reason for any official to be in Little Indio. They had already gotten everything they wanted from this place years ago and then left it to rot. Her father had brought her here to the middle of nowhere to escape the eyes of every branch of the High Proctor's power and reach. Not only was this place mined out of raw ilium, it also held a few bad memories for them. They lost some battles here, or some such thing. Something messy and ugly the High Proctor's First Order wanted to forget.
Well, he's not good, null kind. No, he is not. Could be a void, but how? The mayor lamented.
He took another drink, finishing his first ale, half of it down his front. Berdonna grabbed a bar rag and went to mop it up, but he pushed her hand away.
You want another, then? Jack lifted the empty cup. Stars above, yes, yes, yes. A bounty hunter, a spit, I tell you. Here, what does he want?
Taking off his hat, he handed it to Berdonna, who set the filled triangle on the bar. The light wasn't at all kind to the man's round head and bald spot.
You done something wrong, Mayor? Got a contract on you? Jack asked over his shoulder as he pulled another mug of ale for the man.
No, no, I follow the laws. I'm a man of the balance, I am. Citizen of the First Order, just like you, Goodman Jack, just like you, equal for everyone, right? You know me, you know I am. It's been hard.
Hasn't it been hard for you, too? Jack grunted.
Berdonna pet the mare. Sympathy always loosened his tongue. He wasn't a nice man. It wasn't a secret that he lorded over the village and took tremendous advantage of everyone he could. No one... Not even the most loyal man of the First Order could say that things had gotten easier for anyone after the Proctor's War, he said.
That's right. But I can't like having a bounty hunter here. He follows no laws. Those bikes would take some charges, wouldn't they? How rich is he? How can he power them bikes? He don't look rich. Those men with him? You think them spies, too?
Last time he was here, there were two, Jack said. Bredonna remembered them. It had been a few seasons, but they were two she wouldn't mind seeing again. They look as plain as dirt, in better clothes. That wasn't how Bredonna would have described them. The miller saw a witch. I know how them look. You can't hide a witch with hair as yellow as wheat and that pretty gold skin. There wouldn't be a witch without a mage. Gotta be magickers, said the mayor. Magickers. Jack nodded as he spoke, brows lowered thoughtfully as he leaned into the conversation. Bredonna knew talk of magic and the patrol always got him nervous. Everyone had a secret they didn't want the High Proctor's First Order men to discover. The mayor nodded back. Got to be. Why would he bring something so pretty in here to Little Indio? And no big patrol at his back? No correctors with him? He must know someone, said Jack. No one taking him down off that high and mighty. Has to be a service spit, mage shit working for the consortium. Who can do that but a mage? The mayor didn't hold back his feelings about magickers. Every word came out laced with so much disgust that he was nearly spitting them. Bredonna listened closely. What's this? Witches out of the city were not normal. There were some said it was against the law for the woman's own safety, of course, but as far as Bredonna knew, no actual laws had been passed. She just knew that the consortium and the proctor owned them all. Her own father had taken the pledge of the last witch seen outside of Yesidio, the only witch in Little Indio, Annika's mother. He'd snatched that woman up like candy in the street. Captivated by Pa's allure, the crazy light-brained Noelle found herself in a full-on pledge as his hearthwife before she could blink. He bound her up with a paper contract she didn't know how to escape, making them all into a little miserable family. The mayor took a little sip of his drink and kept on complaining. How can it be legal for that man to have sugar out of the city walls? How? Any city walls? Diorato? Yesidio? Perdane? Even the sky-damned Artine don't let their women out of their walls. How does he get to break the law like that? What kind of friends does he have that he can ride those hummers through my town? With sugar in his lap and not a care in the world. And why is he coming here? Getting drunker and drunker, the mayor kept asking the same questions over and over. That's right, my friend, that's right. We have nothing here. Jack nodded vigorously, as if the mayor was saying things of intelligence. The mayor said, Our Ilium is all gone. Fiends like him hoarded it or poisoned it so the landed couldn't use it. Everyone knows that. Now half our lands are cursed or haunted. They forced that war on us, and now we can barely scrape 2 coppers together. Why come here? Where'd he go? Bredonna asked, since Jack said nothing. The mayor took a long drink of his ale. Pressed up against his side, she could feel the stuff sinking into his system, tension along his side loosening. It didn't take much. Didn't you hear, girl? The wood. He drives to the edge of town, past the refinery, right on past the Califera harvesters, and into that old evil wood. Wish the proctor would send the correctors and cut the damn thing down. They tried, Jack frowned. Bredonna hadn't been here then, but she'd heard stories. The proctor's armies, the correctors, had a terrible reputation. They also had all the power. She could soften at least one of them if they ever came back, but Little Indio had been abandoned by the proctor. No one ever came here. I think he's got more than one, don't you? Didn't someone say he takes whatever he wants when he's on a hunt? How can he get away with that? The mayor drank more ale. He was a pro drinker. Bredonna gave him space to take a couple deep breaths after, perspiration dotting his brow, but he didn't have more trouble than that. She knew in about 10 minutes he'd be too drunk to give her any more actual information.
One what? Jack asked.
Which? I heard he will take them when he goes to collect his bounties. Why does he get to keep witches? He's not a mayor. He's not a good old boy like you either. He's magic or trash.
Yeah, you said trash. He bring any trouble with him? Jack asked.
You sure he free of the patrols? No notices of an inspection? No one after his suite?
Sure as can be. There are road checks on every road. Every friggin' road.
Didn't I tell you? I thought I told you. I know you never leave your bar. You're a good man like that, old Jack. But I had to pass through them last time I went to see my brother.
He had told them. The mayor complained about the pass requirements every time he came in for the past several years.
And if I didn't have his letter, I'd have to turn around. Can you imagine? Magic or trouble again. I know for sure that a person can't get past him unless he can fly.
You think that is what the spit did? Use a witch to give him sky power?
Whew, wouldn't that be a sight?
No witches like that anymore, said Jack. Maybe in the cities, not here, sure of that.
Did those men with him have witches too? I've never seen a proper witch.
Was she pretty? Jack gave Bredonna a side eye. He told her he thought she was beautiful.
Was he trying to make her jealous?
Bredonna had seen pure witches. The native-born stood out like sunshine in a jar.
The last time the patrol came through here, you know they took more than sugar. The mayor was in full wine now. They won't let me do any proper policing, won't let me hold the judgment circle, won't let me do nothing but collect taxes and debts. And then they take what they want after I done all the work and from who they want.
The mayor took what he wanted after becoming mayor.
Until the patrols took it from him.
Jack nodded. Bredonna knew he had a storage area he kept secret from the patrol. Maybe that was why he was worried about the bounty hunter.
Every few months, he set aside half his brew for the patrol, just in case they came through, and put it where they'd see it. The rest he hid, including anything he thought was valuable. He'd forced Bredonna to hide there.
You don't owe no debts, Mayor, so nothing to fear, and neither do you, Jax. We are all safe, said Bredonna.
Girl, how can we be safe from someone who just isn't afraid of the patrol? Who is that woo-woo and a real who has that woo-woo and a real witch to power him? Who has the kind of machines this man has? I don't like what the proctor has done. Lost family to his conscription, I have, like everyone else, but you know he's right about the energy.
Them filthy spits hoarded it all and killed the world, said the mayor, with authority.
Bredonna had to find her haste. Had to hide her face in her hair and bite her tongue.
This man complained about the government that made him afraid of in his own house, stripped him of his authority, and drained the town of natural resources down to the women and daughters who brought forth the next generation. And on the other hand, he praised them for the reason they did it all.
She knew who her enemies were. Everyone else. And she'd do anything to find a place where she could finally be safe.
Hey, two people. Thank you for listening. This is from Caught Balancing Magic. It is my story on Rheem, which actually you can read these chapters, I think, or you will be able to read. I have to freshly post. But you should be able to read these chapters for free if you follow me on my Rheem, and the link is in the profile. And I